Chapter 31. Petra knew herself to be a complete coward, but she set out for Chainings with the rest of the Mallorans without revealing her secret to anyone, even though by now there could be no doubt. She clung to Robin's comment about wanting to make a child legitimate. It had been convoluted. Something like, "Have you considered that I might..." But he'd said it. Even if he did not particularly want to marry her, might that have been true? She would have to find him and tell him, for the child's sake as much as anything. She would not impose the shame of being a bastard on her child. The invitations to the Marquis of Ashet's Venetian masquerade had instructed everyone to arrive as darkness fell, wearing their costumes, and the costumes were to be the most traditional and concealing. The enveloping domino cloak and the Venetian half-mask. To help conceal identities until midnight, there would be no preliminaries, no official welcomes, no introductions. There could be some variations in the costume, and Petra had instructed the Mallorans in them. A hat was acceptable instead of the hood, especially if it hid most of the hair, and it was best if hair was powdered to hide its colour. Ladies who wanted to be particularly mysterious could wear a dark veil hanging down from the edge of the mask to completely hide the face. As they said, at a Venetian masquerade, a man could find himself in the embarrassing situation of seducing his own wife. Guests had also been instructed not to bear arms. Petra had questioned that.
"Men so often get carried away," Diana had said, "and a mock duel becomes real. In any case, dress swords are inconvenient. They're always getting in the way. Mistress Cornalis was wise to ban them at her events for that reason alone."
Petra wondered if she might meet her mother's friend tonight. If not tonight, some other time, for she longed to meet someone with whom to share memories. She travelled to the event with her father and Diana. As they turned up the drive to the house, she fastened the deep blue cloak, made of the same fabric as her dress, and put on her mask, which covered her entire face, except for a narrow strip from nostrils to chin.
"I do admire that mask," Diana said, fixing her own, which was feathered with a tiny suggestion of a beak at the nose.
Petra's mask was plainly shaped to her face, but she'd painted it half-silver, half-midnight blue along a swirling line that itself was marked with spangles.
"I remember that design," said her father dryly.
Petra gasped.
"Oh, I'm sorry. I should have realized."
She bit her lip, wondering how she could have been so foolish. "My mother treasured one like this, and I always loved it, but I should have guessed why." He smiled, perhaps a little sadly.
"She will like to see you wearing a copy tonight, I think."
Petra was grateful that the mask hid threatening tears. Her mother would be delighted to see her daughter safe and in the loving care of her father. But if she was witnessing this, she knew Petra's sin and secret. She suppressed a sigh as she put on the traditional three-cornered hat. Her father's mask was also a bird, the commonest style for a Venetian festival, but in his case the mask had a predatory hooked beak, perhaps of an eagle. His hat was round-brimmed and plain. Did it deliberately cast a sinister shadow over his masked eyes? After weeks in his company, she knew he wouldn't disown her for her sin, but she dreaded having to tell him. "Enjoy the night," Petra told herself. "The shadows descend tomorrow." They were part of a stream of carriages and riders, all dawdling, to take in the magic. The trees lining the drive were hung with coloured lanterns, which also illuminated figures that looked like fairies sitting on branches, or dryads peeping out from behind trees. Then, causing laughter and applause, some moved and ran off into shadows. They'd been real people.
"Delightful," Diana said, pulling a garnet cloak closed over her pink gown. "We will have a ball for you soon, Petra, and must think up something equally charming. A shame that Ash had stolen the Venetian idea. Is there anything distinctive from Milan?"
"Not in the same way," Petra said.
"Opera, perhaps."
"You could commission one," Diana said to her husband. "About Petra's adventures, even. The fugitive nun."
"Alarming," Lord Hrothgar said. "But I suppose we could hold it in the old abbey crypt."
Petra wondered if they were serious, but the event would never happen once she revealed her state. Their coach paused by the open front doors, and it was time to climb down. The house was also hung with small lanterns, and most of the windows had been covered with colour of some sort, so that lights inside shone out as through stained glass.
All around Petra, masked and cloaked people flowed into the house, a river of cheerful anonymity. Some wore the shorter style of cloak, but others the full one that fastened all down the front, making it hard to tell if the wearer was male or female, unless a wide skirt spread the cloak, or it parted to reveal legs. Petra suspected some deliberate deception. Some ladies were wearing skirts without hoops, as she was, so as not to give too much away. Some gentlemen were wearing the older style of stiff-skirted coat to suggest width. Perhaps deception went further. From the back, she was sure one figure was male, but when he turned, she saw that his black cloak hung open over an elaborate ivory-coloured gown. A sturdily built woman, or a man dressed in women's clothing? Her father and Diana were admiring the clever hall decorations, designed to suggest Italian ruins, and making plans to outshine them at a grand ball in Petra's honour. That would never happen now. She let the throng carry her up a staircase, through an arch, and into a grand space pretending to be an Italian piazza. There were even small balconies here and there, on a higher level. "Designed by Madame Cornalis," she heard someone say. "She is Venetian, you know, so it must be quite exact." It was, in impression at least. Petra slipped behind some plaster columns and found a dim, concealed walk around the perimeter of the room, ideal for whispered flirtations and even kisses. Walking along it, she eventually found a narrow staircase built against the wall. The simple construction and new wood told her it was part of the fantasy here. She navigated it carefully to arrive at an equally narrow passageway that circled the room at the higher level. The floor was merely planks, and she stepped onto it carefully, but it was solidly made. It was unlit, but light came in now and then through those cunningly constructed balconies. The chatter and music seemed so far away, almost in another world. Petra walked carefully to the nearest balcony and looked down. She had to smile. The illusion of looking down at a small piazza thronged with a festive crowd was even stronger, and she could imagine herself back in the past, when she'd first attended a masquerade. She'd been 17 and thought herself very grown up. It had been the beginning of her flirtation with Ludo, the teasing and kissing she'd been so sure led toward marriage. She could almost imagine this man or that below was he, looking for her while she playfully hid, intending to be found.
"Petra Daverio," said an Italian voice.
Petra turned sharply, but of course it wasn't Ludo. It was a woman, gowned and masked like all the rest, but in her case with scarlet and purple feathers.
"Signora?" Petra asked. "You don't recognize me. Hardly surprising, but I am Teresa Cornalis, my dear. Teresa Ima once."
"Oh, how did you recognize me, ma'am?"
"The mask. For a moment it was as if Amalia was back with us again. She, too, wore a blue cloak.
Another mistake. No. Mistress Cornalis presented no danger, and there was nothing eerie about the coincidence. Blue went with the mask. Of course, Mistress Cornalis added, I was helped by knowing you to be in England.
Petra suddenly wished she weren't in such an isolated spot.
How?
I wish you no harm, the woman said, with a strange three-pointed smile that made Petra think of a cat.
She pulled herself together. She had only to step onto the false balcony and call for help.
I was simply startled. I'm pleased to meet you, ma'am. My mother spoke warmly of you.
Dear Malia. And now dead in a convent, I gather.
I'm surprised that news has reached England already.
As I said, questions have been asked about you.
By whom?
Petra asked, trying to sound only mildly interested but tingling with excitement. It must have been Robin. This woman must know who he was.
Signor Vazzi, now so fortunately dead. Dispatched to hell by Lord Grandiston, I understand.
Lord Grandiston? Petra recognized the name of the officer mentioned in the newspapers, but there was a peculiar emphasis in the way it was said. In truth, this woman was a stranger, for all she'd been her mother's friend. And her mother had warned that Teresa Eamer was not entirely trustworthy. Any impulse to share memories fled, at least for the moment.
Do you require anything, ma'am? I must rejoin the company.
The woman stepped aside.
Of course. I merely wanted to make myself known. Here, tonight, I will be busy, for this is all my design, and I must make sure no problems occur. But perhaps we might have time for more leisurely conversation in London one day.
Petra curtsied and squeezed by to make her escape without commitment. As she worked her way back down the staircase, she went over the conversations seeking the traps. Then she paused. Ah, did Teresa Eamer think she had grounds for extortion? If she intended to demand money, not to reveal the truth of Petra's birth, she'd soon find that plan exploded.
Robin arrived at Channing's with Thorn, Christian, and another friend, Lord Duncourt. They'd gathered the previous night at Duncourt's place, near Leatherhead, and enjoyed a merry party there. Robin just wished he could be as merry as he'd used to be. His friends ascribed his mood to his attempts to take over his earldom. It wasn't entirely true. His failure to find Petra lingered like infection in a wound. A gathering of friends had been a relief, but he'd forgotten how close Channing's was to the area where Petra had disappeared. He couldn't stop scanning every street and room, just in case she was there. And as he entered Channing's, he found himself doing the same thing. He wouldn't even recognize her in this noisy mass of cloaks and masks, for heaven's sake, yet still he couldn't stop. That hand, that back, that laugh. That light step. That perfume. Petra hadn't worn perfume during their adventures, but he turned, wondering which passing lady he'd detected. The pink, the red, the white, the blue? He grabbed a glass of wine from a tray and let his friends drag him onward in exploration of the transformed house. Teresa Eamer completed a circuit of the house and was satisfied that all was as it should be. She'd had no doubt. She'd become skilled at arranging such events at her own house, and in this case, she hadn't been spending her own money. Money, money, money. Always such a problem. She had achieved what no one else had. Created entertainment so lavish, so exciting, that all the fashionable world begged for tickets.
She, a foreigner of no particular birth, who'd arrived in England with nothing, now dictated to the aristocracy. But one must provide the best to attract the best people, and lenders demanded repayment, while tradesmen presented ridiculous bills. And now this Almack was attempting to imitate her assemblies and steal her clientele. She considered the opportunity she discovered, shrugged, and set off in search of a gentleman in purple with only a narrow eye mask. When she found him, she said, 500 guineas, you mentioned? The young man turned to her. She's here? I told you there was a possibility. Dark blue, with a blue and silver swirled mask. Finely carved lips smiled. How kind of her to be so distinctive, said Il Conte di Purieri. You have my gratitude, signora. I would rather have payment. That ring would do. He looked at the gold ring on his right hand, smiled cynically, and slid it off. True. I will be leaving the country very soon. He gave it to her and moved off into the crowd. Robin was playing for shillings at the EO table, which provided no excitement but offered escape from other activities. Even with doors and windows open, the place was growing hot, however, and he was thinking of moving outside when a hand touched his arm. He turned to find a woman in a scarlet and purple feathered mask. He rose. Ma'am? Would you step aside with me for a moment, sir? An Italian accent. After one sharp heartbeat, he realized it wasn't Petra. Madame Cornalis, I congratulate you on your design. She inclined her head. Thank you, Lord Huntersdown. He moved into a quieter corner with her. You have some means to see through masks, ma'am?
No, my lord, but I have a long experience of watching masked crowds in search of interlopers and troublemakers.
Which am I? She laughed that away.
When three tall young men enter together, and one calls out to Robin, and is later addressed as Christian, I know they must be the Duke of Eithorn, the Earl of Huntersdown, and the dashing Major Lord Grandiston.
How disappointing to be predictable. But what do you want with me, ma'am?
You visited me, did you not?
Robin came sharply alert. You have news of Petra Daverio?
I might.
He curbed surging excitement. What do you want? Cunning eyes shone through the slits in her mask.
A promise of gratitude if I am of use to you.
He wanted to say he'd pay anything, but he knew the sort of woman he dealt with.
Too vague, I'm afraid.
She made a moue of distaste.
If you insist on a marketplace, I would give you useful information, my lord, for the promise of 500 guineas.
500 guineas if I speak to her, he amended.
Such a hard bargainer. She is here, my lord, wearing a sapphire blue domino. In fact, her cloak is a very similar color to your own. Her mask is a distinctive blue and silver swirl.
Robin moved away, but she said,
Wait!
When he turned back, she said,
There is another here seeking her.
Who?
Il Conte di Purieri.
Robin inhaled.
Is he, by gad?
He moved away again, but she caught his cloak.
He is dressed in purple and armed.
Ashut will not be pleased, Robin said, and went in search of his host. He kept alert for both sapphire blue and purple, but he needed to find Ash. Having obeyed instructions, he now needed a sword. It was only as he worked against the tide to go downstairs that he thought to wonder if Madame Cornalis had given lousy Ludovico the same information about Petra, Damn her cold, greedy heart. To Hades with the rules of the masquerade. He grabbed a passing servant and demanded to know what Ash was wearing. The man's eyes went wide, but he said, "Black, with a devil's mask." Robin soon saw him observing his guests. "Ash, I need a sword." "No fighting. There's someone here armed and up to no good." Ash frowned, but led the way out of the hall and unlocked the door to a room that contained a collection of weapons. "Who?" he asked, as Robin took a rapier and tested the balance. Robin hadn't encountered Ash since his adventures, so hadn't told him the full story. "A certain Conte di Purieri from Milan," he said, trying another blade. "It's a long story, but if he's here, he'll try to abduct a lady." "An Italian lady?" "In a way." Robin made his choice, buckled on the sword belt, and rearranged his cloak. As he headed for the door, Ash said, "Do not try to kill him, Robin. Blood, you know. So messy." The Marquis of Ashet found himself talking to an empty doorway. He swiftly loaded a pistol, put it in his pocket, and went to seek his cousin. After all, Hrothgar had recently acquired an Italian daughter from Milan. Despite everything, Petra was enjoying herself. She'd forgotten how wonderful it was to flirt, especially in the anonymity of a masquerade. She flitted from one gentleman to another, exchanging only cryptic remarks and teasing smiles, and granting the occasional light kiss. The company was better behaved than one would find in Venice, probably because everyone knew this company was select, and that the masks would come off at midnight. A woman treated too coarsely could turn out to be very well protected. A woman who behaved too rashly could be ruined. The dancing began, and a gentleman in red swept her into the central chamber to join a line. She laughed as she began the lively steps, and he grinned back at her. He had hopes and would be disappointed, but for now all was joy. But as she turned, she looked up and saw a man in purple watching from a balcony. He wasn't the only one to have found his way up there, but he seemed to be watching her. When she looked up again at the next turn, however, he'd gone. Well, it was also a delight to be admired. She concentrated on the dance until the final curtsy to her partner, but then slipped away from him. She worked her way around the edge of the room, seeking other amusements. But an arm came around her waist, and she was swept into the shadowy area behind the facade. "Stop that!" she gasped, thinking it was her dancing partner. But then she realized who it really was. He didn't say anything, but grasped her face and kissed her. She knew his taste. She knew his smell. She knew everything about him. After a breathless moment, Petra kissed him back. Somehow, Robin had found her, and she had no will to resist. He broke the kiss, breathing hard. "Come." He took her hand and pulled her along the passageway and into a side corridor. He didn't stop there, but led her down some back stairs, through kitchen areas and outside. She found herself on a quiet side of the house, lit by a half-hearted scattering of lanterns and completely deserted, though the chatter and music of the masquerade poured out of windows nearby. Without a word, he tossed aside her hat and tugged at the strings so her mask fell to the ground. His was merely a narrow black strip, and she laughed in delight to see his beloved features again. He unfastened her cloak to reveal her bare shoulders and low bodice and reverently kissed them. Gasping with pleasure, she fumbled his mask off, then his cloak, and slid arms around him beneath his coat to relish the feel of his long, strong torso as his lips sealed hers. Oh, sweet heaven, his kiss! His kiss!
How had she survived without this? Stays. He caught breath to say, laughing with her as his hands ran up her back, then down again, and he kissed her neck and down to the exposed swell of her swollen, tingling breasts. Her whole body tingled. In just moments, he could do this to her. She wanted to be insane again, here in great danger of discovery, but she managed to whisper, "No, Robin, no, please." This time he didn't protest. "No," he said, drawing back, taking her hands between his. "But by heaven, Petra, you've driven me insane. Where did you go? Why? Who are you here with? Tell me it's not another man, beloved." She laughed shakily. "Not like that." "Beloved?" He stilled, looking into her eyes. "I didn't mean to embarrass you with that. I'm sorry. I vowed not to pester you. Robin, love." But she stopped her protest. What was he offering? He'd made it clear that he couldn't marry a penniless bastard, that he could only take her as his mistress. Was that what he had in mind? She was still a bastard, but she wasn't penniless, and she brought that other dowry he'd spoken of. Powerful connections. She could tell him that, but despite her love, despite the child growing inside her, she didn't want to offer her marriage for dowry or connections or even to make their baby legitimate. She wanted him to offer it when he thought she had none of those, so she would know. She drew her hands free. "Robin, I still can't enter an unblessed relationship with you or anyone. You don't have to worry about me. As you see, I am in good care." "Unblessed? Where did you get that idea?" "Struth, on the boat?" He thrust his hand through his already loosened hair, and the ribbon fell off. Petra bit her lip on tender tears. "I was uncouth," he said, "unbelievably so, terrified to tell the truth. Things did go rather fast, if you remember, and there was no time later to make things right. You gave me no time. You left." Hands gripped so they wouldn't reach for him, she said, "I read that page in your notebook. The pledge." "Good God, that? Pure idiocy." "Idiocy at 1,000 guineas cost. I promised Teresa Cornalis half that just for news of you." He captured her hands again. "Marry me, Petra, please. I'm hollow without you." Sheer bliss brought tears to Petra's eyes, but then she hesitated again. Tell him first about the baby, or simply throw herself into his arms. She saw the tightening of his face. "I understand if you have a low opinion of me, my foolish levity, my clumsy attempts to find you. Robin, my failures in the knight-errantry business. You saved me," she protested, laughing now at his folly. "You killed Vartzi's man." "That was Dan Fletcher. I did kill Vartzi, but..." "Did you indeed?" a man said in an Italian accent. "Then I have another score to settle." Petra went ice cold as she turned, praying it wasn't so. With such a narrow mask, however, she recognized Ludo immediately. "What are you doing here?" she spat. "Get out! Go away!"
"So imperious. By all means I will go, but with you. And after having killed the man who soiled your lips."
He drew a slender but doubtless lethal sword with insolent leisure. Petra remembered with horror that weapons were forbidden here. Robin would be unarmed. She threw herself between the men.
"Soiled! Robin wants to marry me. You wish to soil me and always have."
Ludo shoved her aside.
She stumbled but turned, ready to try again to prevent murder. But Robin, oh, thank God, had a sword out too and parried Ludo's vicious, killing thrusts. But as the swords clashed, she remembered Vartz's man when Robin hadn't quite been good enough. She screamed for help. She scarcely had a sound out when a big hand clapped over her mouth and she was dragged back. Ludo hadn't come alone. Of course he hadn't. Why hadn't she realized that? People were coming from the house, but it would be too late. Robin was holding his own, but another of Ludo's men was creeping up on him from behind. So like the previous fight, but this time Robin was the one who'd be killed by a cudgel. She fought to free herself, to be able to scream a warning. But then a pistol cracked, and the man staggered and then collapsed on the ground. Masqueraders were running toward them now, but Robin and Ludo fought on as if none of this was happening. Neither could afford a moment's distraction, for they were too evenly matched, and both were willing to kill. Death danced on every turn and thrust of the long blades. Petra realized she was crying as she struggled against her captor. She couldn't bite, she couldn't kick, she couldn't escape. But then he grunted, and his hold slackened. She wrenched free as he tumbled at her feet. She stared at the knife hilt in his back, but then someone else pulled her into his arms. When she struggled, he said, "It's your father." She stilled, but stared at the raging fight, tears pouring. "Do something, please!" "It's in hand, but I think..." Robin's leg gave way, and he staggered to one side. Petra cried, "No!" Ludo cried out, too, in triumph, as he drove his sword down to pin Robin in death. It plunged into earth, for Robin rolled, then thrust up, and drove his sword into his opponent's heart. Ludo collapsed on top of Robin, impaled in a bizarre embrace, until men ran forward to pull him off and help Robin, bloodstained, to his feet. Petra ran to him. Her father didn't prevent her, but Robin held her off with his left hand, sucking in breaths. "Don't get his blood on you." She gripped that hand. "Your leg! Your leg! What have you done to it?" "Only used it, love. A feint. I hoped he'd heard of my injury." He stopped to breathe, and Petra wavered, dizzy with emotion. When someone draped her cloak around her shoulders and put an arm around her, she leaned, knowing it was Lord Hrothgar again. He handed her the mask. "Best to become anonymous," he said, and drew her into shadows, concealing her identity from the growing crowd of cloaked and masked men. She put it on, realizing that Robin's identity was exposed now. That she still didn't know his full name, and he still didn't know about the baby. But her eyes were drawn to her too insistent lover. They'd taken out the sword and rolled Ludo onto his back, most of them puzzling over who he was. Ludo. Beautiful, arrogant Ludo. The man she'd once adored was definitely dead, his eyes staring. "Why pursue me?" she whispered. "Why?" Robin came over, wiping blood from his hand with a cloth. "None of this was your fault," he said. "Blood was all over him, however. Ludo's blood." "Yes, it was. If I'd not..." "Not now," her father said. "Hunters down. I gather you are Robert Cockcroft." "Who?" Robin asked. "Quite," Hrothgar said dryly. "We will need to discuss various matters very shortly." "Hunters down?" Petra's mind felt scattered into fragments. So that was his real name. Where had she heard it before? Robin seemed to see Hrothgar for the first time. He looked from him to Petra,
eyes widening. Struth. But he recovered almost immediately. I request the honour of Petra's hand in marriage, sir. But my apologies. If you refuse, I'll take it anyway.
Robin, Petra warned, feeling her father tense.
Will you?
The Dark Marquis said, with a dangerous lack of inflection. You are owed some tolerance for your assistance to Petra on her way to England, but tolerance can be stretched to breaking point. He turned to a man in a black domino. Not too many people seem to have come close to events, Ashurst. Ah, Fitzroger, too. Excellent. With swift action, this story can be controlled. I leave that up to you. Petra, come with me.
Petra looked at Robin, wondering if love demanded rebellion, but he only gave a rueful smile that seemed to say, later.
Yes, later. And she hadn't yet told either man about the baby.